Yo, 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 what's good? What's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of That Is AK Podcast. Good morning. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Early morning pod, getting right to it. Starting the day off great. Starting the week off great. Obviously, as you guys know, this is the week of the Super Bowl. Week going into the Super Bowl week, man. football season's over. This is the last game. So this is huge. So I'm gonna have a couple pods this weekend out. I'm gathering all my thoughts and stuff for the Super Bowl and so forth. But we're gonna talk about today. This episode is gonna be a lot about like the coaching hirings and the coaching cycle, because I've been covering the playoff games, and coaches been getting hired left and right. There's a lot of moves. So I'm gonna tackle that and talk about some hires around the league. How do I feel about them? Grade them, you know, give you guys my observations. And like I said, the next couple of episodes, we'll be, you know, looking at the Super Bowl, going over and so forth with matchups, getting super in depth right before the big game. But first and foremost, shouts out to everyone listening. I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Greatly appreciate you guys. And let's just hop right into it. Let's just get into the gist of things. Like I said, the Commanders and the Seahawks, they both have hired coaches. I think those were the last two like available spots. But there's also been like some minor coaching moves, also like teams getting coordinators, getting rid of coordinators. I want to add that in there too. So we'll talk about that. Let's get into it though. So let's start with the Commanders. I'm going to talk about the Seahawks as well for all my Seahawks fans that may be listening. I don't know. But I know for sure that I have a lot of Commander fans that listen to this podcast. So only right that I start with them, and the fan base is really passionate. Not to say that Seahawks fans are not. I'm pretty sure you guys are. But Commanders hire Dan Quinn. And before I get into like the hire and what I think about the hire, I want to talk about where like the Commanders and where they are as a franchise. But then also, Dan Quinn, if I would have told you this a week and a half ago that he was going to become the Commanders coach, you probably wouldn't have believed it. You probably would have been like, well, what happened to Ben Johnson? Well, Ben Johnson reportedly wanted about $15 million. Now, it's a little steep price. But as I told you guys a couple weeks ago, it's 2024. If you're a really good football coach, you're going to be highly compensated for it. So that, no surprise. But given where it's new ownership, this hiring cycle for the Commanders kind of means a lot. That's a really big risk for a guy who, granted, I like Ben Johnson. I think. You know, seeing what he's been able to do in Detroit with those pieces has been phenomenal to watch. And they were one of the more interesting watches throughout the year. I don't know if he's going to be a good head coach. We don't know. We just don't know. Being an offensive coordinator and calling plays and just focusing on the offense, totally different when you're the head guy, you're the head honcho, everything runs and comes through you, right? And I think people are starting to come up and create this notion that, like, you got to hire an offensive coach. You got to, like, granted, I think there is some benefits to hiring an offensive coach, especially with the way how the game is played. But that doesn't mean, like, hey, if you hire an offensive coach, he's going to be a good one. If you hire an OC, he's going to be a good coach. Because granted, I love Kyle Shanahan. I love Sean McVay. The Matt LaFleurs, but for every Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur, there's a Josh McDaniels, right? Like, there's a Brandon Staley. So just because you hire this, like some guru, whether it's offensively or defensively, this young hot coordinator, doesn't mean that it's going to pan out. Because for every Kyle Shanahan, there is a Josh McDaniels, right? There is that. That's just the reality of how it works. Not all of these coaches are going to work out. But Ben Johnson stays in Detroit. Cool. So the Commanders have to essentially, looking at all their options, realistically, Dan Quinn, I thought, made the most sense. Now, let me explain. Do I think this hire is a slam dunk hire? No. Do I think Dan Quinn has just this, like, for instance, does Dan Quinn has like the Ben Johnson upside, perhaps? Potentially, maybe, probably? Probably not. Does he have an upside of being a top five, top 10 coach? Probably not. But I'm going to explain about why I think this hire was made, and I'm going to try to make sense of it. Now, I don't think it's a joke of a hire, because if you look at Dan Quinn's resume, it speaks for itself. It's not a bad resume. He has a pretty good track record. But I don't think this is a slam dunk hire. If I had to grade it, I would probably give it a C+. Probably a C plus. I'll probably give the hire a C plus. And let me explain who the Commanders are as a franchise. The Commanders, and you got to have some perspective on this. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago. I brought up Nebraska in college football. When I was talking about college football, and I was talking about Nebraska, and I was basically saying, if you're 35 or older, your perspective on Nebraska football is very, very different than someone who is 20, right? Dare I say. Those two perspectives are really different. And like I said, if you're older, if you're 35 or older, if you're probably like 40 or older, you probably remember the Nebraska Cornhuskers winning national championships and being a dominant and prominent force within college football. If you ask someone about Nebraska that's 21, they're going to look at you like, oh, they're just a bottom feeder team in the Big Ten. That's just what they have been since that 21-year-old has been alive. But the perspective is different. And with the Commanders, they're kind of like the Nebraska of the NFL. They're the Nebraska Cornhuskers of the NFL. They're Nebraska football of the NFL. If you ask someone that is 40 and older about their perspective on the Redskins / Commanders / football team, whatever you want to call them, I have a sneaky suspicion. Just something in my gut is telling me they're going to probably end up changing the name again. I don't know. The Commanders thing, it's just not sticking. I don't know. Something's in my gut is really, really telling me that they're going to change the name again, but that's a whole nother conversation. Back to my point. My point is, asking someone that's 40 years old about the Commanders and their prominence as a franchise is a lot different than asking someone that is, say, 20. Because that person that is 40 or older, if you ask anybody that's 40 or older, the Commanders used to be a blue blood type of franchise. I mean, they were prominent. They were prominent. They were really prominent and really they were one of the more marketable, one of the better teams in the NFL for a long time. That in the 70s, they went to Super Bowls. In the 80s, they won Super Bowls. They won a Super Bowl, and their last Super Bowl win was in 91. A pretty historic season for them. They had some really, really high-end players, really good coaches. When you think about the Commanders or the Redskins or whatever you want to call them, at some point in time, once upon a time, they were one of the top dogs in the NFL. And like I said, the perspectives is different. Because if you ask someone about the Commanders that is 20 years old, they're going to look at you and be like, they're literally one of the worst teams in the league since I've been alive. And that's my point. Because for me, I'm 22. And my perspective on the Commanders, they've been one of the worst teams since I've been alive in the NFL. They've been essentially a laughing stock. They've been a laughing stock. And it kind of shows you how important ownership is, because Dan Snyder, over the last 25 years, what he did to this team, the amount of just toxicity and negativity around this franchise. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. Because, like I said, and it's not that long ago. I know Grant is like 25 years. I get it. But, like, it's not that long ago where the Commanders used to be, like I said, perspectives are different. But if you ask an older person about the Redskins and how you feel and watch, and as they grew up watching the Commanders, they would tell you that they were one of the better teams of the league. They were one of the better teams in the league. They were one of the more remarkable teams in the league. They was in D.C. Like I said, great players. They've had legendary coaches, right? But there is Dan Snyder, so toxic, so negative, so horrendously bad as an owner. His stench, I feel like, is still lingering around this franchise. So the Dan Quinn, so in terms of the Dan Quinn hire, I get it. He has experience. You look at his resume. I mean, granted, he was the DC of Seattle. They won Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl. He won a Super Bowl with Pete Carroll. Then gets to Atlanta. He goes to a Super Bowl. Loses, obviously, the 28-3 league. That's not gonna be forgotten, right? Cool, transitions, goes to Dallas, and he turns around Dallas defense. From the grand scheme of things, his resume, it looks good. If Dan Quinn was, I don't know, if he was an offensive guy and like 7 years younger, if he was like 44, 45, he would be one of the hottest candidates on the market with that type of resume. He just would. But he's a defensive guy. He's nearing his mid-50s. He's near his mid-50s. So the hire isn't as sexy. But if Dan Quinn can just realistically get this franchise back on track and just have them 8-9 wins, if he can just get them somewhere, if they can just do that for a couple of years, be consistent with that, get like consistently try to be a wild card team, somewhat like that, 8-9 win team. If he can do that, I think the hire is good. Now, like I said, do I ever think Dan Quinn is gonna be like some top five coach? Is his upside insanely high? No, I'm not saying that. And after, like I'm saying, all I'm saying, if he can get this franchise back on track, because this franchise, it's bad. Like, it is horrendously bad. So if he can just galvanize the fan base, get the fan base hype again, get the fan base rooting for something that's consistent, then we can talk about, hey, like, okay, possibly looking for an upgrade that can take them to that next level. But let's see if Dan Quinn can get the Commanders back to an 8-9 win team on a yearly basis. If Dan Quinn can have back-to-back 9 win seasons, I can assure you guys that the Commanders, I know Commander fans that would take that. Like I said, it's not great. I don't think he's going to be this top five coach that's just going to resurrect and bring them back to the glory land. No, I don't think that. But if he can just consistently, if he can just have, like, I don't know, back-to-back 9 win seasons, right? And, you know, they perhaps make a wild card, you know, spot. If that can happen, Commander fans will be happy. And let's just be honest. Dan Quinn's last performance in Dallas was horrendous. Like, it was bad. It was bad. I'm not going to just let that overshadow it. Like, but one game. It was one game. If you look at the totality of his tenure as the Cowboys defensive coordinator, he dramatically improved them, and he had one of the best defenses in the league year in, year out when he was a DC. right? I think he was a DC for 3 years. So, like, granted, I know the Cowboys didn't have much postseason success. And the way how they lost this most recent playoff game was very much embarrassing. But stepping back and looking at the grand picture, looking at the big picture, and not just looking at one game, he turned that Dallas defense around. Because that defense, before he got there, was one of, if not the worst defense in the league. If people remember that. So, Dan Quinn, the first thing is, he's a defensive guy. So, I would assume that the Commanders' defense would be, I think it's going to upgrade. It's going to be a little bit better. Now, like I said, I'm just laying it out there. And people may be like, well, why do they have to go with Dan Quinn? They could have went Mike Vrabel or Bill Belichick. Yes, they could have. But as I told you guys about Mike Vrabel, doesn't quite get along with everyone. Belichick, kind of a similar issue where don't get along with everyone. I know Belichick, the reason why a lot of teams kind of refrain from hiring Bill Belichick is because he wants GM control as well. He wants coaching control and he wants GM control. And in 2024, I don't think teams are going to let Bill Belichick be a GM. I just don't. I don't think that is the plan. If a team was to hire Bill Belichick, and then with Mike Vrabel, you know, this is underrated. But, and I'm not saying Vrabel is a bad guy or he's just too egotistical, but he is hard to work with. He's a hard ass. And, you know, you got a young GM, you got a new owner. Maybe that combination wouldn't have worked. But Vrabel, he's a hard ass. He is a guy with a big personality, and it can sometimes clash. So, like I said, if you take those off the table, Dan Quinn was the best option. Dan Quinn was the best option. Now, he's going to be very dependent on the GM. And also what's happening on offense. They hired Cliff Kingsbury, who I like that hire as the offensive coordinator, right? You would assume that the Commanders would love to take Caleb Williams. You would assume that they're going to take a quarterback and they would love to take Caleb Williams. He's a hometown guy. He's from DC. He likes the Commanders. Cliff Kingsbury worked with him at USC this past year. You would assume that they would love to draft Caleb Williams, right? And part of the downfall in Atlanta for Dan Quinn was, first, Kyle Shanahan left. Then Matt Ryan started declining, but then the GM started missing on picks and whiffing in the draft. So they could never get the train back on track in Atlanta after that Super Bowl loss. And it's multiple reasons why. Like I said, Shanahan had left, Matt Ryan declined, and they were just missing on too many picks year in, year out, and then it led to him getting fired. It led to Dan Quinn getting fired. And that's the thing. Like, as a coach in 2024, you got to have somebody at the quarterback spot, right? Like, that's why I think Dan Quinn's success is contingent upon who he drafts at quarterback. If he drafts the right guy at quarterback, that is how you get extensions. If the Commanders draft the right guy at quarterback, Cliff Kingsbury will get other head coaching opportunities. Dan Quinn is going to get extended. And everybody in the front office is going to get extensions because that's just how it works. And it's kind of like if you draft the right guy, and it don't even got to be like a superstar, but if you draft a guy like a Dak Prescott or a Kirk Cousins, granted, I don't know if you're going to win a Super Bowl, but you're going to be competing year in and year out. And like, for instance, and we see it all the time. For instance, the Jets a couple years ago, when the Jets traded away Jamal Adams and they acquired all of these picks and They had a lot of just draft equity and a lot of picks, right? A lot of draft capital. And you look at the guys that the Jets have drafted. They've drafted like Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson. They have drafted a lot of high-end premium players. But it's the instance of they drafted all of these guys. Say they drafted 8 guys. 7 of the 8, they can play. The only one that can't play, that has not worked, Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson has not worked. And that is how important the draft, that is how important the quarterback spot is. You can draft an all-pro corner like Sauce Gardner. You can have a really good receiver in Garrett Wilson. You can hit on all of these picks. But if that one pick that you miss on is the quarterback, you're screwed. You're screwed. And that's why Joe Douglas kind of shaky with the Jets. You know, you're hearing things come out of the Jets, and that's what made them go out and trade for a 39-year-old quarterback, and then he pops his Achilles, right? That is what happened. That is why Robert Saleh is praying, and that's why his job is going to probably be on the line next year, because they whiffed on that one pick. Now, if it was flipped, if they had 8 draft picks and they drafted 8 guys and 7 of them couldn't play, but the one guy that could play is Zach Wilson, the Jets, the trajectory of the Jets is changed. Just like with the Texans. If they drafted C.J. Stroud, let's just say C.J. Stroud did not work out, but they hit on Tank Dell, they hit on Will Anderson, they hit on all of these picks, Derek Stingley, they hit on all of these picks. But if C.J. Stroud didn't work out, the Texans would not have won a playoff game. They would not have won a division. They wouldn't have done all of that. They would have been solid, right? Just like the Jets, solid, right? But they wouldn't have this upside of if they didn't hit on C.J. Stroud. If C.J. Stroud couldn't play, if he couldn't play worth a damn, the Texans would be screwed, just like the Jets were screwed when they found out that Zach Wilson couldn't play. That is how important the quarterback spot is. So with Dan Quinn, I mean, like I said, I don't think it's not the sexiest hire. It's not the hire, you know, of the century, right? I think it's like a C-plus hire. To me, my first thoughts, I thought he seems like a younger version of Ron Rivera. You know, retread coach, previously got his team to the Super Bowl behind an MVP quarterback's season, right? But like a defensive guy, right? It kind of feels that way. But this was the best option on the table, and if he can just be consistent with getting to 8 or 9 wins with this franchise for a couple years, and then the Commanders worry about like trying to upgrade, that is a plus. If that is the ceiling, if that's what he's going to do, then that is a plus. That's a plus. But that's how I feel about the Commanders hiring. Let's move on to the Seahawks. I spent a lot of time on that, but I had to. I know the Commander fans are going to probably appreciate that, but yeah. That's my thoughts. I don't think it's a bad hire. I just think pump the brakes. A lot of the success will be contingent upon, you know, obviously the GM being able to draft well, but then them hitting on the quarterback. Because like I said, your GM can draft well. The Jets, they drafted well. They've drafted a lot of guys, right? Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson, right? They have drafted really well. Quinn Williams, they have drafted really well. But the one pick that they missed on, it was Zach Wilson, and it was the most important pick, and it's biting them in the ass. It's biting them. And opposite side, the flip side of that is, you look at the Texans, they hit on their picks, but they hit on the most important pick, and that was C.J. Stroud. And now their upside is immense because C.J. Stroud has top 5 quarterback potential. He has that type of potential. So a lot of it is contingent on what you can do at OC, quarterback. That, like, that's where the league has come. That's where the league has gone. So as a coach in 2024, as a football coach, granted, you can be this defensive genius, but if you don't have the guy under center, it's going to be really, really hard to keep a job for an extended period of time. That's just facts. All right, so let's move on to the Seahawks. Another passionate fan base, right, I would say. Now, with Seattle, they were able to hire Mike McDonald. They made their hiring before the Commanders, just so people don't get confused about the chronological order. And I like this hire. I like this hire for the Seahawks. I like this for Mike McDonald. It makes a lot of sense. Now, as I told you guys in the previous segment, this whole notion or gist that whatever coach you hire, or it has to be the young offensive flashy coordinator. If you're just looking at the market and who got hired, or looking at the best coaches that were available, there weren't too many like high-end offensive gurus that was on the market. A lot of the coaching candidates that either end up getting jobs, or still, you know, they have to wait until the next cycle. A lot of them were defensive guys. And like Raheem Morris, Vrabel, Belichick, Dan Quinn, Mike McDonald. The only like real offensive guru was Ben Johnson. And Jim Harbaugh, I mean, he was destined to go to the Chargers. If he came back to NFL, it felt like a foregone conclusion that he was going to be with the Chargers. And even with him, he's a former quarterback, but he's wired, like he's wired in how he thinks about football. Like he's kind of like a defensive guy. His teams are physical. His defenses are physical. His approach, and he's wired like a defensive minded coach. So a lot of these guys are like defensive minded or kind of wired that way. And like I said, I'm not going to fall for the whole thing. I'm not going to fall for the notion like, hey, you gotta draft, you gotta hire an offensive. No. I think there is some benefits to having an offensive guy, right? I think it's really beneficial when you have a young quarterback mixed in with a young offensive play caller, and you know, as the head coach, I think that's perfect. That's perfect. But there's good defensive. There's like really good DCs that turn into good coaches, right? And like I told you guys, for every Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, there is a Josh McDaniels, right? Right. That's just the point of it. For me, I think when hiring these young offensive coordinators or young defensive coordinators, I like them to call their side of the ball. I like them to call their side of the ball, right? I think for a young guy like a Mike McDonald, a Ben Johnson, I like for those guys to call a side of the ball. I don't want a 45-year-old CEO coach. I want a guy that can call his side of the ball. And with Mike McDonald, he's been one of the best defensive coordinators in football over the past 2 years. What he was able to do with that Ravens defense this year was remarkable. Obviously, they have some really good talent, but you know, despite that, they dealt with some injuries throughout the course of the year, and he still had that defense performing at a really high end level. And ultimately, the defense, I would say, you know, it kept the Ravens in that AFC Championship game and was ultimately good enough for them to win. The offense just fell through. So defensively, he can really coach his tail off. And like Ben Johnson's the hot, sexy, you know, offensive coordinator, right? Mike McDonald is the equivalent on the defensive side. He's just as good. He is just as good, and he is an expert of that side of the ball just as much as Ben Johnson is offensively. So I like this pairing with John Snyder and the Seahawks and this team. First, look at the division that they're in. NFC West, you got Kyle Shanahan, you got Sean McVay, two of the best offensive minds that the sport has. If you couldn't hire a guy that could compete with them in terms of being able to match their offensive prowess, why not try to get a guy that can potentially slow them down? Like I said, Mike McDonald faced both of them this past year. His defense has obviously faced both of them. The Ravens defense put on an absolute show versus the 49ers on Christmas Day, forcing five turnovers. They forced five turnovers, and that was against the 49ers. So Mike McDonald had a really good showing versus both of these guys. So and honestly, that's the high end. That's like the high end of the – that's like the plus, I would say, about the hire, that he's been able to show that he can compete and go head-to-head with the best offensive minds in the league and take every punch. I mean, like I said, he held Kansas City to 0 points in the second half. And as I said, he virtually shut down the 49ers on Christmas Day, right? So that's a plus. That's a plus. I think also with him being a defensive-minded guy, the Seahawks' problem isn't their offense. They have nice offensive pieces. Now, obviously, the quarterback spot is still a question that they have to answer, right? Geno Smith he's there, but he is their short-term answer. In terms of long-term and who's going to be the next guy to take that mantle, they still have to find that. And John Snyder, I would say, has a pretty good eye and a pretty good track record for evaluating players in general, but especially the quarterback spot. So I think you should feel, if you're a Seahawks fan, you should feel, I would say, confident that Snyder can do that. As I was saying, though, offensively, the Seahawks have nice, high-end, premium players. Jackson Smith and Jigba. Obviously, they have Lockett. Obviously, they have DK Metcalf. They got Kenneth Walker in the backfield. They have some nice pieces. They got an improved offensive line. So, offensively, that has not been the Seahawks' problem. The reason why a lot of people were not surprised that the Seahawks moved off of Pete Carroll, and I talked about this throughout the season with Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, is, hey, Pete is supposed to be this defensive-minded guy, but his defenses are lacking. And his defenses, they've been lacking for some time. They were lacking in the back end of Russell Wilson, of that whole era and that stint. The Jamal Adams trade hasn't panned out. They're probably going to move off of him, right? And even with Geno, over the past couple of years, Seattle they've been better than what people thought after the Russell Wilson trade. But ultimately, the problem has been their defense. And that is why I like the hire so much. They're all good on offense. They can figure out, hire the right OC, find the quarterback. They can figure out the offensive thing. The offensive thing is not hard. The defensive thing is where Mike McDonald's expertise comes into play, and that is why I like to hire. Seattle has a really good fan base. They're used to quality football. That's just what they've become accustomed to, right? With winning a Super Bowl, winning playoff games. That's what they're accustomed to, right? And this situation, as I explained, a lot different than the Commanders situation, right? Where the Seahawks, they have enough sweat equity with their fan base. Where, like, hey, Maybe the Seahawks, let's just say, hey, maybe the Seahawks are not as good this year. Maybe they're not a 9-win team. Let's say Mike McDonald wins 6 games, right? But if, you know, they win 6 games, go into the following year, draft your quarterback, maybe that is where you look like 2025, right? That's the window. With the Commanders, though, it's a lot different because they don't have the sweat equity. Their franchise has been negative and toxic, right? That hasn't been Seattle for the most part. Over the past decade and a half, the Seahawks have been a really prominent player within the NFC, within NFC contention, right? So they got enough sweat equity built in there where, hey, if Mike McDonald's first year, if they're like a 6-win team, that's okay because the fan base is passionate, they're strong enough, they've experienced enough success where it's not the end all be all. So I like the hire. I think, like I said, obviously it comes down to the quarterback, right? Like that's the big question. Like going forward, who's going to be their guy? Who's going to be their guy under center? Because essentially, I mean, you know, Mike McDonald, I think he's a brilliant defensive guy, but you can be Bill Belichick. And I'm not saying this facetiously, but this actually happened. You can be Bill Belichick. You can be the greatest defensive mind that the sport has ever seen. In 2024, though, if you can't get the quarterback spot right, you're screwed. You can only do but so much. Your ceiling can only be but so high. So offensively, they got some nice pieces. And they got some nice pieces on defense. Just collectively as a unit, they haven't been great. They got some nice players. They got some nice players in the secondary. They've drafted some really good corners. But they got to now put it all together. And I think Mike McDonald is that guy. Offensively, they're good. Offensively, they're fine. They can score points. They have nice weapons. They can do it all on offense. Defensively is where Seattle has been lacking, and they've been lacking for some time. Like, literally, their defense hasn't been elite or hasn't been a good unit since the Legion of Boom, right? Like, since the Legion of Boom, after the Legion of Boom, their defense under Pete Carroll has left a lot to be desired. It's left a lot to be desired, and it's underachieved. And quite frankly, that's what kind of led to the demise of, you know, granted they would have some really good regular seasons, but that's why they couldn't win as many playoff games as maybe they thought they could with a prime Russell Wilson because of the defense. The defensive issues that they have had and the defensive inconsistency. So we'll see what happens with Seattle and what they do in the draft. Like I said, John Snyder, he has a pretty good track record with, you know, with drafting. But hey, if this doesn't work out, Snyder, you know, obviously Mike McDonald is going to be well paid. I think it's a 6-year deal. But this is big. This is big. This is big because ownership, like I said, the fan base, you got enough sweat equity for, you know, a 6-win year, right? If they go six and 11 next year, okay, you got enough built-in sweat equity. But 2025 has to be the window, and they got to figure out the quarterback thing going forward. Yeah, that pretty much that covers up the big coaching moves that was made. I know Boston College's former coach Jeff Hackley, he got hired as Green Bay's DC defensive coordinator. I know he got his start. Obviously, Matt LaFleur is the coach in Green Bay, head coach, obviously. I know Jeff Hackley had his start with the 49ers. Then with the 49ers, he had Ohio State as the DC, and then he got hired at Boston College. For a couple years at Boston College, hasn't been great. Obviously, Boston College is not a great, like, it's like in terms of like college football, like they're not like a a big time recruiting pool, right? It's going to be really, really hard to be good at Boston College. And probably, essentially, he was probably going to be fired soon. So I'm not mad with the jump. He was, like I said, he's going to probably be fired soon. And on the short side, with the way how college football, and he's really young, with the way how college football is operating, and I don't think it's going to operate like this forever. I think at some point there is going to be some type of rules, some type of stipulations, some type of boundaries that are set. But as I told you guys a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Jim Harbaugh, well, that was what, last week? But I was talking about Ohio State and their big-time moves in the portal. And like I said, not bashing Ohio State, not trying to down Ohio State. You do what you got to do, if and it's completely within the realms of, you know, of how things are done in college football. But I think with college football being so wild and just being so, like, I mean, literally every player couldn't be bought, and every one of your players are free agents after 1 year. And it's like, man, I know some people like, well, the coaches get to leave. Yeah, the coaches get to leave and the players get to leave, and everybody in the situation is getting paid. So I don't feel like, I used to feel bad for the players when coaches just up and leave and go on to the next opportunity. I used to feel bad. Now I don't, because players are getting paid left and right. That's no longer an argument. That's no longer an issue. So I think, you know, with the way how college football operates, it wouldn't surprise me if more, you know, especially younger guys stepped away from college football and, you know, did something else, this, you know, from college football coaching in terms, that's what I'm talking about, and stepped away and did like some broadcast work or did some NFL stuff, because it the cycle, I wouldn't be surprised if more and more young big-time coaches stepped away from college football. Obviously, your guys that work, you know, the Oregon job, like Dan Lanning, you know, Sark and Tech, like those jobs, that, like, I'm not talking about those type of guys, because those jobs are really good jobs. Those are high-end jobs. But, for instance, Boston College, like, not a great program to start with, you know, in the ACC, conference realignment. He was probably going to be fired sooner than later, with, you know, that's just how it goes. But left, and I'm not mad with it. I'm not mad with it, because it is, college football is a circus. But then it's Boston College. He's going to get fired anyway. He's going to get fired. So he got, and everybody thought Brandon Staley was going to be the new Chargers defensive coordinator. The Packers' new defensive coordinator, because of the Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur connection that he has. But no, he did not. Jeff Hackley from Boston College, former head coach, he took the Packers' defensive coordinator job. This is huge. This is a big job. This is a big time job. The Packers, they got a really nice young team, coming off a really good year, and there's gonna be a lot of eyeballs on the Packers, because they got a guy that can play in Jordan Love, I've seen somebody already say Jordan Love, pick or predict Jordan Love as their 2024 MVP. So there's going to be a lot of high expectations for the Packers. They play in a really competitive division now. You know, Green Bay's good. Detroit is good. I would assume Chicago, whatever they do, they would be better immensely. The Vikings are a wild card right now. But whatever. Huge hire in Green Bay as the DC. I'm gonna wrap this bad boy up. Obviously, I have more content coming out throughout the week as we're leading into Super Bowl week, Super Bowl, the big game. So I hope you guys enjoyed. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Continue to like and follow the pod, share the pod on social medias and so forth, and whatever streaming platform that you use. But thank you guys. Peace, deuces, I'm out.